Commanders, which at one time was the Redskins, now they're the Commanders. And he had a home in Potomac, Maryland, which is a very, it's a wealthy part of Montgomery County, Maryland. And his home was worth $49 million. Then after he sold the Commanders, or right before he sold them, he went on and bought another house in Virginia in the $39 million range. And he also moved to London and bought another property over there. Well, with $6 billion, you can do it. And so he had been trying to sell his $49 million property, and he dropped it to $39 million, but still couldn't sell it. So if Dr. Green could tell us, and we have Dr. Green from Taxes R Us, and he's our show guru on taxes. So tell us what Mr. Snyder did, Dr. Green.
Well, what Mr. Snyder did is actually just try to go in and take advantage of the tax laws. So he had a home that he was unable to unload or sell. So what he did is he reduced the price of that home from $49 million to $34.9 million in hopes that it would sell. But after 6 months, the home still did not sell. So what he ended up doing then is he made it a charitable contribution. So by him doing that, gave him the opportunity to take advantage of a lot of the Internal Revenue tax codes. And one of the major reasons why you would want to do that is because it avoids the capital gains tax. So if he went out to sell the home, and he sold it for more than it was, you know, more than it was assessed for or more than he paid for it in the beginning, the difference between those two prices would be capital gains, and it would be taxed at 20% of that gain. So by him donating the property, he eliminates the ideal of having to pay the capital gains tax on it. That's the first thing. The other thing that happens when he actually have any interest in the home, meaning that he does not have to pay for the upkeep of the home, he doesn't have to pay property tax anymore, he is clean of it, and that's the responsibility of the charitable organization in which he would donate that property to.
But now, by the way, he donated to the Cancer Society. His wife evidently had breast cancer some years ago. But what does that do as far as his $6 billion sale of the Commanders? Now, I think he out of that deal, he got about $3.5 billion because he had some limited partners. What does that do anything to offset some of that windfall?
Well, the problem with that is that you can't carry that charitable contribution backwards. So you can't carry it back, but you can go forward with it. I don't know how the deals was transacted between the sale of the NFL team. Maybe some of that income was deferred for other years. But if it was, then what happens is when he actually goes and donates this property, he's been able to take a percentage of his adjusted gross income, which we call AGI, and that's limited to 50 or 60%, depending on how he's doing it. But if it's 60% of the AGI, which means that if he had $100,000 worth of income, he could offset $60,000 of that. So that's the play. And then what happens with that is the excess, which he does not use in the given year, can be carried forward for 5 years. So that's why people donate a lot of things, because they're looking at the tax implications that could reduce their tax paid not only in the current year, but in the next 4 years as well.
So you mean that he didn't do this out of the goodness of his heart?
Well, I mean, the media talks it up, like, you know, his wife, you know, I'm not trying to belittle what happened to her. I mean, she's a breast cancer survivor. So he wants to give it to something so people look like, oh, out of the goodness of his heart, he's doing it. But the bottom line and the driver behind this is the tax benefits that he will receive, because otherwise he had a home that he couldn't sell. And secondly, it was just a cash leak, you know, so it was just draining cash every month for the upkeep of it, the property tax. And now he can just get rid of that and take the benefits of the tax code.
Yeah, I know some people are thinking, listening, why are they talking about somebody who donated a $49 million house when I make a $1.385 an hour? Why are they talking about that? Well, we're talking about this because you might have sitting in your backyard or somewhere a car or that it's been sitting there. You might have gone out and bought a new one and the dealer offered you $230 or $500 for the car. But you said, if they took that car and donated that, what would the implications be with that?
Well, if the person could actually itemize, meaning that they're going to, they have things that they can itemize that would exceed what the standard deduction would be for their bracket, meaning their filing status bracket, then they would be able to take the value or fair market value of that car as a deduction on their tax return. So that's why people would, when they have cars or homes or things like that, that are just sitting there, and like you said, would be available to be donated. Sometimes it's advantageous for you to donate those items because you could write them off for the full market value of them. And also you would help another organization get income to support their causes.
But now, so I got a car. The dealer has offered me $250 or $300 in a trade-in. But when I look at the blue book says the car is worth $700 or $600. Or if I'm donated, the group that I'm donating it to gives me a receipt saying I donated a car worth $500. Could I use that $500 as my deduction, or would I have to look at what the dealer offered me for?
Well, you would look at both. So the $500, I mean, usually what we're talking about here is really de minimis amount, meaning that we're talking about the difference between $500 and $250. So let's just say the dealer offered you $250, but the car is worth $2,000. Then it makes a big difference. And then we have to look at the tax implications of that. Because really what we're talking about, like we're really talking about tax brackets. Let's assume that it's a $2,000 car value and your tax bracket is 20%, meaning that that's how much you're paying in tax based on the income level that you have. So 20% of $2,000, the tax benefit of that would only be $400. So if you were to donate the car, you would get $400 worth of tax. That would be dollar for dollar reduction. Whereas if a person gave you $200 or $250 for the car, that's all you would get. So in the case of a $2,000 scenario that we're using, it would be more advantageous for you to actually donate the car for the $2,000.
What about, you know, I know a lot of people, they go to churches and they go to the Goodwill or Salvation Army and they donate clothes. What kind of deduction could they get for those? What kind of deductions do they get for those?
If the individuals are itemizing, then what they can get is either they, depending on the clothing, whether it is new or slightly used, then what you would do, you would be able to donate the total overall value of those properties that you're giving. So if it's clothes, and, you know, if you take in $10,000 worth of clothes and you have a receipt for that, then you would be able to deduct $10,000 for that. The problem with it is once the numbers exceed $5,000, you need to have an appraisal. So the appraisal value then is what the IRS would be looking at. So anytime anything is going to be above $5,000, they want an appraisal for it. I'm talking about a single item. So if you went in with a car and you said the car was worth more than $5,000, they would want an appraisal. So even like we were talking about with Mr. Snyder, although he's saying that this house is worth X amount of money and he wants to donate it, that would still be donated based on an appraised value.
Yeah, the assessed value, I think, is more like $33 million or something. But the market value, even though it didn't sell and it was on the market for a year, the market value is $49 million. So that's what he would be able to itemize and deduct.
Well, but the problem is that it's twofold, right? So what you have to do is you have to figure out the basis of the property. So remember, when he first bought the house, Mr. Snyder, that house was only worth about $8.9 million. Then what he did is he went out and bought an additional 15 acres of land that surrounded that home. So I don't know how much the acreage was worth, but obviously when he put it on the market, it was worth $49 million. He then cut the price to $34.9. So he took a cut and the list price. So now what you have to do, the IRS would actually want an appraisal of the value of that home. So if the house did appraise at $49 million, then that would be what he would be able to write off, because that would be truly the fair market value of the property. Otherwise, it would be worth, you know, the 34.9, which he put it on the market for.
Okay, but let's get back to, if I took some clothes in and the church, excuse me, the church or the Goodwill Salvation Army or the veterans donation site, and I took some clothes in and they gave me a receipt for $4,250. Is that going to be acceptable to the IRS, or am I going to have to go out and get appraisals on the clothes?
No, that would be acceptable, because that's a receipt and it's below the $5,000 threshold. So no appraisal would be needed unless one item exceeds $5,000.
Now, I remember in the past, before the pandemic, you would take clothes in, because I've done it several times, down the street from where I used to live, there was a major shopping center that had a non-profit donation site, and I forgot the name of it. But they would just hand you a blank, because they were getting so much donations, they would just hand you their sheet, and you would put on there the amount that you donated. Is that legal?
Yeah, it's legal. I mean, because you have a better indication in your mind of how much those things are worth. So, you know, and that's pretty common. So you see that a lot, where even if you go to, any of the 501c organizations, they may just give you a blank receipt, but they're hoping that whoever get those receipts are going to be reasonable, you know, that they're not going to put, you know, a dollar item in there and, you know, try to take a $10,000, you know, deduction. So, you know, but that happens, and, you know, the burden of proof is still on the taxpayer, meaning that the taxpayer, if they were audited, would have to prove that they did give what they said they give. The actual receipt is just a starting place to say that at least I did donate something. The value may be wrong, but if at least I donated something, and here's a receipt.
So, but if the taxpayer doesn't let you know, you walk in and you give them a receipt and say that you donated $6,500 worth of clothes, should you be alerted that you need receipts or anything like that, or do you really need to have receipts as long as it's not one
penalized for filing returns that were fraudulent when you did not do your proper due diligence?
Dr. Green, we're going to take a pause of the call, and Dr. Green is known as the tax whisperer. So we'll be right back with you, Dr. Green. And the question I have, see, I've heard that no matter what figures are on the tax return, the filer who signs it is responsible. But we'll be right back. I always thought that. And the phone lines are over 800-450-7877. I always thought that the person who was filing the taxes was responsible for what was on that tax return, not the preparer. So you're saying the preparer can be held liable too?
Oh, yeah, clearly, because there's a couple things. If a person is self-filing their returns, if you're filing your return without the help of a professional, yeah, you're clearly responsible for that. The information that you provide to a tax preparer, they have to look at that information and decide whether or not that information appears to be correct. So what the Internal Revenue Service has done is they came up with what they call a Form 8867, which is a paid preparer's due diligence checklist. So you have to go through a lot of different items to make sure that you are in compliance with what a paid preparer should be doing. And if you violate or do not do the things that are requested in that checklist, you are responsible. And typically those penalties can vary depending on how much they are. So it is up to a paid preparer to ensure that the information that is being provided to them appears to be reasonable.
So if you I'm not knocking anyone's profession, I'm not knocking anyone's job, but you have a lot of people who pop up in their houses and the back of a gas station and meeting you in fast food restaurant to do your taxes. And I believe everybody should make a buck. But is that someone you should really have confidence in when they say, oh, okay, we'll claim this and we'll claim that? What kind of training? They usually have a tax preparation course, but is this really someone who knows the really ins and outs of doing your taxes?
No, I think what happens is people get caught up into how much someone is going to charge them to do their taxes. So if the guy down the street will charge them $50, where the guy, you know, professionally will charge them $100, they're going to the $50 guy. So sometimes people can't see the forest for the trees. And what happens is those are the people that will say, I can get you this amount of money back. All we have to do is this. But at the end of the day, those individuals will not sign your tax return. So if there is an issue or if you are audited, then you're out there by yourself because you can't find that person anymore. So, and what the IRS is doing is they are putting all of these safeguards in there to kind of eliminate people who shouldn't be doing tax returns, to put them in a position where they're not going to do them or they're making it very difficult for them to do it. And as a person that needs their tax returns filed, if I'm going to pay a person, they definitely are going to sign my return for me. If they're not willing to sign the return, I'm not going to pay them.
Well, you know, that's like that old, and when you get audited, it usually costs you double of what you would have had to pay in the first place, or triple. But that's like the old saying, you know, pay me now or pay me later. And when you pay later, you always pay more. So it's wise for people to use professionals and educated professionals who understand, because the tax code is unbelievably confusing. And it's confusing.
Well, I think for the person who has not been around the code or not educated in the code, it is confusing. And it was probably intentionally done so that you could eliminate people who had no idea of what they were doing to file returns for you, because we're in a society where people are just looking for the most money that they can get back in a refund, and they'll live with the consequences down the road if they're ever audited. So they're willing to take those risks. So if you're willing to take those risks, believe me, you will be audited. And the way the IRS works is that they know that people are creatures of habit, meaning that if you got a $1,000 refund this year, you're going to do the very same things for the next 2 or 3 years and, you know, and still get your $1,000 refund. So when the IRS come after you, they come after you for 3 years. So they're not going to audit you for 1 year. They're going to audit you for 3 years. And if those 3 years are bad, they're going to open up the rest of them. So that's why you have to be careful. Just because you're getting a refund today don't mean that it's a legitimate refund.
Dr. Green, in closing, do you have any, as the tax whisperer, do you have any little tidbits that we need to know on what we need to be doing? We're getting close to the filing time.
Yeah, there are several things that people should know. You know, April 15th is coming rapidly, so we're within 3 weeks of April 15th. So what we need to do is, if you are going to owe money, there are still some opportunities. You can contribute to a Roth or to a traditional IRA, and that will that amount that you pay in as a contribution could possibly help you on your tax situation for this year. You also may want to look around and make sure that if you have someone that's living with you, a parent or a cousin or a relative who's not filing a tax return, you may want to pick those people up as a dependent. That will also help you from a tax standpoint. Also, in the 2023 year, if you bought things like a new stove or a refrigerator or energy efficient things such as windows or things like that, those credits are available to you to use on this year's tax return, meaning the 2023 tax year return. So just keep in mind, there's a lot of credits that are out there that you may need to look into. And when you go to a professional, these people will point out all those things for you to ensure that you're going to pay the legal minimum tax.
Dr. Green, how can we contact you if we need you?
Well, if you need me, you can always reach me at melvin@melvingreen.com, which is M-E-L-V-I-N at Melvin Green, G-R-E-E-N-E, and that way you will be able to get me. You can also Find me on We Dream TV under the Monday Green Show. You can reach me there, and also you can reach out to Dr. Stark if you need to get my contact information.
Dr. Green, thank you so much, and you have a pleasant weekend. And we're gonna have you on one more time for tax time to get the last minute folks time to find them. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate the opportunity.